Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Walls Do Talk, a true crime podcast. I am your host, Gabrielle Weimer, and I'm so happy to be back here with you all. We are in the swing of the holiday season. It is right in the beginning of December, so I hope you guys are all having a great time out there with friends and family, enjoying everything that the holidays have to offer. I'm excited to bring this story to you because it actually took place around this time, just a few years ago. It's winter time and it's right in the beginning of December. So I figure this is a perfect time to share this very, very killer story with you. So let me set the scene. Like I said, it's winter time. It's about 7 a.m. and I'm outside in the middle of the field with a detective and an officer. And the reason I'm here is because we had a homicide around 1 a.m. So I've already been up for many hours. And we actually made our way back to the crime scene because we had sunlight. We needed some sunlight so we could actually look and scour through this field to make sure that we didn't miss anything. So we're out there. We're just about to wrap it up. You know, we're walking through, looking down at all this dry grass, just making sure we don't see anything else. And I hear on the police car's radio, I hear dispatch. And this is what they say. We got a dead body located at a bus stop. We need officers to go over, take a look. And so immediately I look over to the detective and he kind of just shakes his head at me and goes, don't worry about it. Unfortunately, it's probably just, you know, a homeless individual that has, you know, died in their sleep. So I kind of shrug it off and I'm like, all right, whew. So I keep looking for the evidence and we're just about to wrap it up. And then I hear the police officer's radio go off again. But this time, it's a patrol officer. And he says, I need a sergeant over to the location at the bus stop. We definitely have someone who is dead, and they are covered in blood, and they have multiple stab wounds. Immediately, I just throw my hands in the air, and I look at the detective, and I just let out, are you fucking kidding me? Because this is our second homicide within 24 hours. And we kind of both let out this groan. But we just, you know, all right, let's go. So I pack up my van, I load my stuff, and I clear my head and get ready to handle another homicide. So I get out to the scene where this second homicide is located. And it's in a residential area. And it's still pretty quiet in the neighborhood because it is a weekend. People are still sleeping. It's early and they're just kind of now waking up. So I pull up and immediately on the corner of the street, I see the bus stop. And this bus stop is one of those that has the bus bench, but it also has this metal awning, like a little enclosure. And in the corner of the enclosure, I can see my victim. He's tucked away in the right corner. I get out of my van and I start to walk up a little closer to him. And now I can see that the victim, underneath him, he has two big black suitcases and those are tucked against the back. And now he's laying on these suitcases like he was sleeping there for the night. And as I get a little bit closer, I can now see exactly who our victim is. He's an older gentleman. He's quite small and he's fully dressed. He has black hair and he's wearing a black fleece jacket and a pair of blue jeans and white tennis shoes. And he has this gray sleeping bag that he has like tightly tucked around his waist, like if he was wearing it as like a blanket. He was using the sleeping bag as a blanket. Now, as I get a little bit closer, I can see he is covered in blood. His black hair is heavily matted, soaked in blood. His black fleece jacket, I can now see that there's multiple tears, which look like stab marks to me. It's tears in his jacket. His hands are clenched in tight fists and covered in blood. And there's drops of blood all over the suitcase, all over the sleeping bag, all over the jacket. There's blood spatter all over the inside of this awning, all over the sidewalk, all over his clothing. Immediately, I knew by looking at him in this scene that this was a very, very violent death. His eyes are wide open and they're just staring at the top of this bus awning. He has a large laceration that starts at the bridge of his nose and cuts through his nostril, through the top of his upper lip, causing his mouth to just be wide open. At this point, I back away from the body and I begin taking notes. Investigators arrive, the head detective arrives at the scene, and we're looking over the body. And we can tell that it looks as though he was just sleeping there. And it looks as though he has never moved from that position. And the reason we can tell this is A, his sleeping bag is still really tight tucked around him. And the white shoes, I described his white shoes. Well, there wasn't a single drop of blood on his tennis shoes. So that led us to believe that the attack happened right there. He was killed in that position and has never left. Now, with all of that information right there present to us, the key piece of evidence was the drip trail of blood. As we backed away from the body, we could see that there were tiny drops of blood that started right where the victim was laying, went down on the sidewalk, wrapped around the corner, and continued on the sidewalk for over a block. So every 3 feet, you would have a little bit of a drip, and then another drip, and then even another drip. So instantly to us, we knew, that's it. That must be our killer's blood. Let me explain something to you. For those of you that have never stabbed somebody before or even processed a scene where a very violent stabbing has occurred. When you stab somebody over 50 times, it's tiring, it is exhausting, and it's messy. The blood saturates the knife. It saturates the hand of the stabber, and then it gets slippery. So as you're swinging, the knife handle is wet and slippery, and you're going and going. And if you, with such force, strike the body, but maybe let's say on the skull, it's like hitting a stone. Your hand is gonna slip down that knife and you're gonna cut yourself. Or maybe you're holding down your victim, and you're holding them down and swinging with such might and so fast that you are going to accidentally stab yourself. It happens more often than not. So immediately when we saw that blood trail, we thought, bingo, that has to be our suspect's blood. So I start processing the scene. I'm taking pictures. I'm documenting the blood trail. I'm documenting our victim. And then it's time for me to start focusing more on the blood trail and seeing where it goes. So as I start following the drip by drip by drip, I get down a block and a half and it just stops. I cross the street, I go to the left down the alley, nothing there. I cross the other way and go to the opposite side of the alleyway, nothing there. I turn to detectives and let them know I cannot find any more blood. Like it's going consistently and then it just stops. So at that point, we also know, okay, obviously our suspect's bleeding, 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 and then it just stops. So A, did they wrap up the injury? Were they able to cover the injury and then stop the bleeding and continue on their way? Or maybe they got into a car, or maybe they got into a bicycle. All we know is that they were able to stop the bleeding, so we can't really determine which way that they're going. But we know who can determine which way they're going. We all decide that let's bring out a bloodhound. And this was so exciting because this is the first time that I was working with bloodhounds. So that's exactly what we did. We reached out to a nearby agency and we asked if they can bring out one of their dogs. So within an hour, we're standing there and out comes this beautiful big bloodhound. He was absolutely amazing. And we get to meet their handler. And the investigation for the bloodhound is underway. So what happens is we all have to stand in a line. Anybody that was around the body needed to back away from the body, and we stood in a line. The dog was able to dismiss our scent by coming by each of us and, you know, sniffing us, getting a whiff of our scent, went over to the body, smelt the body, and was off. So I got to watch the whole thing go down. The dog picked up on the trail of our suspect's blood and took off. It went right around the corner and it went down the block and then it crossed the street and went away into an alleyway. It went about 800 feet and then it just stopped. The handler said that, you know what, this is as far as a dog could pick it up. The guy either got into a car here or got into a bicycle or got picked up somehow, but the scent had just stopped. So at that point, we take note of exactly where the dog stopped. We thank the dog and the handler for coming out and providing us with their assistance. And that's pretty much it. It still, at that point, didn't lead the investigation any further to where the suspect may be or who the suspect is. So by then, the medical examiner team comes out. We look at the body. We preserve the body the way it is because we are going to process everything back at the autopsy. So our victim, as bloody as he is, we leave the clothing on him. We cover his hands. We preserve everything around him, package him up essentially, and take him over to the medical examiner's office. So for that day, I am done. I am absolutely exhausted. It's the second homicide I handled that day. And I remember all I have to do now is focus on getting to the autopsy and continue on there. So now I go to bed, I wake up fresh, and I make my way to the medical examiner's office the next morning. When we get there, we slowly start to collect his clothing and we want to get down to his injuries. I need to see his body. So once the medical examiner office take off all the clothing, I can now see all the injuries that were sustained by our victim. Our victim had over 50 stab wounds on his body. His hands were covered in defensive wounds. His fingers were sliced open. The sides of his palms were sliced open. His forearms had 3-inch long lacerations going down from his wrist towards his elbows. He had stab wounds on his chest. He had stab wounds under his armpit. He had stab wounds on his rib cage. And he had stab wounds on the shoulders and on the top of his head. We were even discovering that he was stabbed so violently that the tip of the knife remained lodged inside his skull. When we removed a portion of his skull, we were able to recover the small tip of the blade. Whenever you see that in any of your cases, you know that this was one, you know, it's a huge, violent attack. So once we did all our photography, we collected all his clothing. I swabbed his hands. We swabbed his injuries. We were done at this point in the investigation. That's as far as that could have taken us. Our focus now is going to be on the blood trail. I want to get all this evidence back to the station so we could get it submitted over to our crime lab. We want them to test that blood. We want to see if there's any DNA under our victim's fingernails, knowing that this was such a violent attack. Maybe he fought back. One thing that I didn't share with you that I do want to share is that when I was at the scene in the early morning hours, remember how I told you people are just starting to wake up? Well, I overheard some of the officers interviewing people that lived in that area, and two different people came over, and I want to share with you what they said on what they heard that night. And I quote, "Gio was awoken at about 200 hours by what he believed was a male voice arguing with somebody. He said he did not think anything of it, since it's an ongoing issue with patrons from the local bars. Gio explained that the male voice sounded desperate and in pain. He said the argument went on for about a couple of minutes. A second witness came forward, and this is what she stated. She was awoken at about 1 in the morning by someone screaming. She said the screaming sounded as if someone was being burned. She said it went on for about 2 minutes. She said during the 2-minute span, the screaming would stop, but then continue until it completely stopped. She further described the screaming as petrifying and horrifying. She said, I also didn't call the police because this is an ongoing issue with the homeless people yelling in the area. Both people made similar statements. They both said that they heard a male voice desperately screaming in the middle of the night for help, but they chose not to call just because it's an ongoing issue. That breaks my heart because this was not an attack that only lasted 10 seconds, 20 seconds. This is a brutal attack that went on for minutes. And if anybody out there has ever been in a fight, we know that a fight that lasts 1 minute feels like 5 minutes. So our poor victim, he was struggling and fighting for his life for at least, 2 to 3, 4 minutes. And also the autopsy did reveal that there was never a major artery that was hit during the stabbings. So he just bled to death. He died from loss of blood, not because he nicked an artery and he passed out right away. He had to suffer for quite a long time. So I'm going to conclude this part of the story right there. We have our victim. We know that he's been brutally attacked, but we are soon going to find out who our suspect is. And I cannot wait to let you all know exactly who he is and what he's all about. And in my mind, he is a serial killer.